Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. On today's show, what's behind the recent walkouts by teachers in West Virginia, Kentucky, Oklahoma, and Arizona, and what does this signal for New Mexico? We'll ask a former teacher and the current president of the Albuquerque Teachers Federation, Ellen Bernstein. Ellen Bernstein, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Steve. I'm so happy to be here.
Great. So I want to spend most of our time on New Mexico issues. Obviously, that's what people are most concerned about. But I'm really very interested in your take on what's going on elsewhere. Like, what's the reason for all this activism that seems to be all of a sudden?
It does seem to be all of a sudden. And I think it's really interesting to see how much things are changing and how rapidly they're changing. I think it has to do with the fact that we've been living with austerity budgets in so many states when it comes to our public services, specifically public education.
Ever since really the Great Recession.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, we've been living like this and living like this and hoping that we're going to be able to restore funding back to pre-recession levels and then get beyond it. And there are so many things that are continuing to deteriorate in schools. The amount of services we can provide for our students, just even the age of the textbooks is outrageous. You know, teaching with really old materials.
How old are you talking about?
Well, it depends on the state you're in. In Oklahoma, one of the reasons that they walked is because they have 40-year-old
textbooks. 40-year-old
textbooks. It's ridiculous. Think about how much in the world has changed in 40 years. So
I've even changed a little bit in the last 40 years.
Oh, hard to believe. But I think what's interesting is that these walkouts, there's something going on in all of these states. First of all, they had no allies in many of these states in the legislature. They had people that were dominant in the House, in the Senate, and in the governor's office that had repeatedly said, year in and year out, there is no money for public education.
Boy, that sounds familiar.
It does.
Yeah.
Unlike New Mexico, where in some ways we've had allies in the House and in the Senate.
Uh-huh. The money has been really short.
The money has been non-existent, and the budget cutting has been excruciating for all of us in schools. But the other thing that happened in West Virginia and then in Oklahoma was there was another piece of legislation that just pushed all these public school teachers over the edge. For example, in West Virginia, they wanted to drastically change their health insurance. They wanted them to wear trackers. Like, literally, there was like a fat tax. And if you didn't wear these Fitbits, then you were going to have lesser coverage or bigger premiums. Right, exactly.
Among other things, yeah.
And then in Oklahoma, it was their pensions. You know, they've lived with low salaries and schools that had no resources. And then there was this move to take away their pensions. And you can see on the internet teachers holding signs that say pensions are a promise. So that's what tipped them over the edge to say, we've got to act now. We cannot continue to let this happen.
So I think what people would like to know is, do you think this will translate to New Mexico? I mean, there's no obvious tipping point right at the moment that I see, but maybe from a union perspective, you may see one.
I'd say right now our legislature isn't in session. So the interesting thing with all of these places, including Colorado and some of our neighboring states, is their legislatures are in session.
Yes.
So it's timely to skip the bargaining table and go basically bargain directly with the people who are appropriating the money. And that's what these teacher rallies are about and these walkouts are about. I would say for us in New Mexico, there are a lot of things that could tip us to a big collective action like this. I think there are a lot of teachers statewide that are fed up and ready. I think it depends a lot on who's going to be the next governor and what public education support or lack thereof looks like with the next governor.
So perfect. So what are the problems? What are the issues that you see as the major ones here in Albuquerque and in New Mexico for teachers?
Well, obviously, we're lacking funding. Teachers haven't gotten regular raises. Our salaries are way behind. And now that these teachers in these states are having such success and they're able to get some money into teacher compensation, they're going to surpass us, and they're going to surpass us fairly easily. So the first thing, of course,
we were sort of at the bottom to begin with. Now, I don't know what the effect of the you were successful, you being the teachers' unions in this last session for really the first time.
The first time in 4 years, we got a raise for teachers. We did have one 4 years ago.
Right.
We're looking at trying to use the money appropriated to cover all of the people in schools, like counselors and therapists and all those other people, because they're important to our students also. So we're trying to figure out a way to stretch what money was appropriated and cover everybody, but that's not going to catch us up. We also have old textbooks. We've been lacking instructional materials money from the state. But I'll tell you what's really been killing teachers is this unfair teacher evaluation system.
The testing.
Tying student test scores to teacher evaluations in an unfair way has been so demoralizing, and people in the classroom call every day. They say this isn't fair.
So
that it's
let me
not
come
fair.
Back to salaries for a second, and then we'll go back and address testing. Okay.
Okay, you got it.
All right. So salaries. So minimum salaries, as I understand it, were increased in the last session, and that's to take place July 1st. Is that right?
Right. Which basically is the next school year
is
for
the
all
next
the
school
teachers.
Year, right.
So. In the state of New Mexico, it is now law that all beginning teachers in their first 3 to 5 years will make no less than $36,000.
And that's gone up from $32,000 that was fairly recently, right?
Yeah, well, originally the law was $30,000. So we've gradually increased it. But those minimums that were in the law to begin with, they're already 20-year-old minimums. We haven't even kept pace with our hopes, much less reality.
Uh-huh.
So then for level two, which are mid-career people, it's
what is that? What are these? There's three levels, right? What do these levels mean?
So these levels are licensure levels. The first level is your probationary license. That means you're good to go and start teaching. And if you have good evaluations, you can do a professional dossier and make sure that you do everything right, you know, that you're a good teacher, and then you move to level two. That's a permanent license.
I see.
And level two, you can stay there if you want. But if you want to advance to a master's or, you know, a higher level of teaching, you can move to level three if you have national board certification or a master's and at least 6 successful years as a teacher.
So is there any performance evaluation component to this?
Absolutely.
Principals? Yeah, okay.
So you have to have good evaluations. You can't progress through licensure if you are not if somehow you are not teaching well and you don't have good evaluations. And, of course, tied to that are good and fair evaluations.
Yes.
That is so important. So anyway, so we have new minimums, 36, 44, and 54 for level three teachers.
So what would you – is there a way to calculate the average salary of a teacher, say, in New Mexico or in Albuquerque?
Yeah, the average teacher salary throughout the state is right around $45,000. And, of course, this
so that's really low.
Yeah.
Really low. I mean, that's one of the lowest in the United States.
Well, we have one of the lowest per pupil funding for our students in the United States, and our students are living in some of the lowest in terms of all the factors that equal child well-being.
Yes.
They're living in poverty. They're food insecure. All of these things going on with our kids. Our teachers are leaving for better and more fair evaluations.
But this number, the $45,000 number, is that what it is right now, and is it going to go up with these increases?
Yeah, I imagine it'll go up slightly, but think about how you average. We are having a terrible teacher shortage, and we are losing our experienced people, and we're unable to attract new people. So the fact that people at the top of the salaries are leaving brings the average down. I know we just got those $2,000 bumps in the minimums.
And plus 2.5%, right?
Well, there's an additional 2.5% appropriated, but it's so complex working on these salaries. But I just want you to know the average will not go up by much because we don't keep our experienced people.
Oh, I see. So when we're going to take a quick break, and when I come back, I want to ask you about the teacher vacancies that you mentioned.
This week in This American Life, culture war.
All of you are now messengers. All of you are the people who are going to go back to your campuses and convert 10 other people.
Conservatives have targeted one of the biggest liberal strongholds, college campuses. Students are training.
We all know this. How do we film our videos, guys?
Horizontal.
Heck yeah. If you film your videos vertically.
We meet a student who follows the instructions, creates a viral video. It makes your campus explode.
Sundays at 4 on KUNM.
We are back on New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm really pleased to have in the studio a former teacher. I think, Ellen, you taught for like 17 years or so.
I did.
Yeah. And Ellen Bernstein is now the president of the Albuquerque Teachers Federation. And you mentioned teacher vacancies, and I read somewhere. First of all, it seems to me like there's all this drive to apply business principles to teachers. But it seems to me the most obvious business principle that you could apply would be all these vacancies. Teachers are voting with their feet. There's
That's
a lot
right.
of vacancies. There's a lot of turnover. Obviously, this isn't the life of Riley. You might think that maybe the low living costs or the summers off makes for a great job, but it's pretty obvious if there's all these vacancies that the teachers don't feel that way.
No, and we've got two problems in New Mexico. We need to attract teachers, and we also need to retain teachers.
Yes.
And all of the studies on what attracts and retains teachers are clear, and that is, of course, salaries are important. People want to be able to support themselves and their families. But the first and foremost reason people stay or are attracted to teaching is because they are able to have a job in which they have some intellectual and creative autonomy in the work that they do. They want to have meaningful work, and they want to have a supportive principal. Those are the things that really matter to teachers. And then they want good supportive policies, right? They want a fair evaluation system. Those are the things when people talk to their own kids about becoming teachers and they're excited about their own work, then they say, wow, you should be a teacher. Right now, teachers are so demoralized and so disrespected that they actually say that they tell their own children not to go into teaching.
So I get the impression from what you said about salaries that you're not going to sort of rest on your laurels the next legislative session, that you actually believe that further increases are warranted. And do you get the feeling from the union membership that this is something that they feel too?
Oh, absolutely. Teachers all over the state will tell you, I cannot even send my own child to college. So what we have now in terms of a slightly increased salary system, that's good for 1 year. But we have to start looking at how we fund education. We have to start progressing. We need a more diversified revenue base in our state. And we need to get our teachers up to a minimum of 40 for level one, 50 and 60 for level three. And that should be temporary. If we really want to be competitive in this state, we want to attract and retain the best teachers. We need to do a lot with salaries and a lot with our working conditions and our policies that support us to do good work.
So I'd like to move on to the working conditions. And you've mentioned testing and teacher evaluation several times. So let's talk a little bit about that if we could. I see like three issues at least with testing. One is, are the students tested too much? You know, is it pedagogically valuable? What's going on? And secondly, you know, should student test scores be used to evaluate teachers? And thirdly, what about the school grading system? Should school test scores be used to grade schools and really give it. There's like 40 or 50% of the schools that are getting a D or F. So let's start with testing school in terms of students, because I looked on the internet. I can't tell how much testing actually goes on. PED says it's somewhere from 10 hours to 30 hours, but other people say that way understates how much testing is actually going on in schools. And also, apparently, it varies by grade. So,
well, I'll tell you, it does vary a lot. So when you look at mandated testing, you can pretty much write off chunks of April and May because that's what the focus is. When it comes to who's doing what testing, since No Child Left Behind, which was the beginning of the 2000s, what happened is the state had an important test with high stakes.
Yes.
Decisions are made. So the feds had one, so the state said we'd better test to make sure we're ready for the test.
So high stakes means what exactly?
Fate. Decisions about the future of the school or the district are made based on a single test.
Okay.
So you got the feds saying that. Then you've got the state saying, well, we better test to see if we're ready for that test. Then you've got the district.
So the state would pre-test to see if the students are ready for the
interim
federal
test. Right. Oh, then the district would say, well, we better test to make sure we're ready for those interim or short cycle
tests. For the state
test.
And so then, we do well on this. I see.
So
I had no idea.
I think it was about fear and high stakes. So
there were three layers of testing.
Right. And what happened is we took a single test that was designed for a single limited use, and we applied it to things that it wasn't designed for. So the PARC test we have now.
Yes.
It's not designed to also go through some value-added equation, which I can explain, and then be assigned to school grades and teacher evaluation. It wasn't designed for that.
What's a design? I mean, it was supposedly coordinated with the curriculum that's now the Common Core curriculum, and the PARC test was supposedly associated with the Common Core curriculum.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely. They are connected.
They're connected.
But what tells? So let's separate a test from assessment.
Okay.
Teachers assess every day. Every minute they assess, because for every student I teach, how you do your work, the quality of your work reflects on my teaching. I assess that. It reflects on your learning. I assess that. I look at your work. I assess that. I communicate to your parents and you how you're doing. That's a form of assessment. That should always be going on in schools. High stakes testing should, first of all, testing should be for information, not high stakes, and it should not be used inappropriately for purposes it wasn't designed for.
So what makes it inappropriate to measure the success of a student or measure the success of a school? What is it about the test that somehow doesn't reveal that?
So they use a method developed by economists and statisticians called value-added methodology.
Yeah.
The value-added methodology is when you take somebody's test score results and you put it through some kind of equation, a mathematical equation, which I can honestly tell you that the rocket scientists in the labs in Los Alamos could not decipher, and then you spit out this idea that it's correlated to the value the teacher added.
So now you're talking about teacher. You're talking about using the student test to evaluate teacher value added.
And that's also part of the school grade, the value added formula.
I see.
So we took it to court. The union, the Albuquerque Teachers Federation and AFT New Mexico took it to court, and we were able to prove in court that this value-added methodology was not reliable and it wasn't valid. And so we're still waiting for the full hearing, but the judge issued an injunction saying you cannot use this formula for employment decisions because it's not valid for those kinds of decisions. And that's happening all over the nation.
Well, if you've just tuned in, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and we're talking right now about testing in New Mexico, and we're talking with the president of the Albuquerque Teachers Federation. And so just so I understand value added, I mean, the idea is you look at student X who was in the fifth grade and how they did on the math test, and then you look at student X and you look at how they did now on the park test in the sixth grade, and you say, okay, this is the difference. So much is expected improvement just naturally, and if the expected improvement is exceeded, then there's value added. If it's not exceeded, then the teacher's not doing her job. And I guess the problem with all this is that there are so many intervening variables that would somehow affect those two metrics that it's simply, as you said earlier, not a reliable way to judge the students or then take a step back and then judge the teachers.
And it's also not a way in which you can inform teachers about what they need to do differently in their teaching. By the time we get those scores back, if they're actually the students we taught, which sometimes they're not, then their students are in the next grade by then.
No, wasn't it, and maybe I'm under a misimpression, but wasn't it really the Obama, the administration, and Arne Duncan at the federal level that really sort of encouraged all this?
Yeah. So here's what happened. It was during the Obama administration with Arne Duncan as the Secretary of Ed, and they came up with this idea that states should compete for the money they need to educate their students. Now, a couple things. One is that was like the recession time.
Right.
And secondly, why would we as a country want to have to compete for the money to educate our own citizens? I think it was completely wrongheaded. But then they embedded this grand social experiment that was originally the idea of a statistician out of Tennessee, that you could actually judge the value of a teacher by looking at student test scores. And so the Gates Foundation got interested and pumped a bunch of money into a study. And lo and behold, if you wanted to get the money from Race to the Top, you had to agree to try that.
You being the state now.
Yes. You had to agree to the social experiment. And so everybody rushed forward.
And New Mexico was part of this.
New Mexico was part of this. But New Mexico, unlike all the other states, did not put it in law. It's only a rule. So we can easily say, when we get a new governor, if that governor is open to redesigning teacher evaluation, which of course we hope the next governor will be, what we have to do is then step forward into what is a valid, good teacher evaluation system look like that supports teachers to do better, not demoralizes them because it's unfair.
So has there been a change since the Trump administration? Is Betsy DeVos still going along with this testing regimen?
Well, it now the federal law is called ESSA,
yes.
Every Student Succeeds Act, and there is testing, but there's the freedom for local autonomy. The state can choose what kind of testing, although they have to do it at a regular interval according to the federal law. They don't have to do it the way they're doing it. They don't have to attach the same high stakes. And they have a lot of freedom as a state to figure out how they want to do teacher evaluation, student testing. And we have a chance as a state to pick a different path forward.
There's a third aspect that I mentioned earlier, which is school grades. The same methodology is used, as you said, you know, you look at student achievement scores and you look at student progress year over year, and then schools are graded by the state. And a lot of the Albuquerque schools and a lot of schools all over New Mexico are getting D's and F's. And you also object to this. You think this is also unfair, correct?
Well, absolutely, because they're using the same invalid measure called value added based on a single test to decide whether or not an entire school and its community is going to be labeled with some kind of letter that's shaming and blaming. And if you track these letter grades with the poverty levels, then you're going to see a strong correlation in many of them. What we would like to see, and there's actually a work group associated with the Legislative Education Study Committee that's focusing on this. We would like to see an assessment of how our schools are doing so that if a school is not doing well by whatever method we measure that, then we rush in with support, not blame. So when we say any of the schools, like they've identified three in Albuquerque, Hawthorne.
Yes.
Hawthorne, you've got the scarlet letters, MRI. You have to have the most rigorous intervention because you've been doing the poorest for
and
so many years.
These are high-poverty schools where—
Yeah, with a lot of turnover.
Right.
You know, students that start the school year that are tested at the end of the year, but they never were there at the beginning of the year or the middle. I mean, there are a lot of issues with schooling. Schooling is complex. So if we're going to assess how a school is doing, then I think it is incumbent on the assessor, in this case the state, to rush in with some supports. Maybe they need before and after school care. Maybe we as a city need to look at stable housing. There are all kinds of things that would help students do better in school, including health care and dental care and basically food.
But if you're a parent in one of these and one of your kids is going to one of these schools, shouldn't you have some kind of option? Shouldn't you be able to do something rather than send your child to a school that, by all accounts, actually is not faring well?
I think, well, in terms of open enrollment, that's state law. Parents can take their kid to any school they want to, that as long as there's room at the school. The issue is, are the parents parents of means? Do those parents in that community
actually have an option?
Have the ability to transport their kid? Does their work schedule allow it? All kinds of complex issues. I think the bottom line is schools do the right thing by kids if we have the support to do it, because that's why we go to work every day.
Okay, so this is a perfect ending to the show because we're nearing the end of the show, and the people I've talked to before doing this show are almost all very sympathetic to the issues that teachers face here in New Mexico. What they're not sympathetic to are the outcomes, you know, the high dropout rates, the low graduation rates. What they want to feel is that there's something that's going to change the trajectory of the state so that though we do better with education. And so this is undoubtedly an unfair question to ask you, but do you see that coming? Is this going to happen?
I think it's possible. I'll tell you what. I always think it's possible because that's why you wake up the next day. Teachers know what to do to get different outcomes for kids, but we are constrained by the people who have the policy authority over us. So, you know, seriously, put teachers in charge and you're going to see a lot of change in terms of whether we can create schools that are engaging for kids and they'll stay there, whether or not diplomas are meaningful, whether or not schools are great places for learning and engaging kids' intellectual and creative selves. We can do that job. Every teacher knows that. The question is whether or not people will support us or hinder us.
We are going to have to leave it there. I would like to thank Ellen Bernstein, the president of the Albuquerque Teachers Federation. I would also like to thank Roman Garcia and Marshall Broyles for their assistance with this show. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Chebecki. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of this show are available at iTunes. Search Stephen Spitz. Archives of past shows are at stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.